No, 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 no. And you know, what is the problem with these people if they have read Justin Martyr? He is a Christian, lived in the year 100. Paul, even before him, Paul. Not like Justin Martyr, there is Paul, the apostle. Like Paul. What about Jesus?
George, what's the...
They regard the Sabbath as a binding day for worship.
On Saturday.
On Saturday. And plus other things, you know, that I believe are of no significance. And I just tell you a story why a little understanding of the Bible can create problems for everybody. I was in Egypt. My older brother became interested in the Adventist. I was doing my training at the Coptic seminary at that time. He phoned me and said, hey, we have this nice American guy who comes to teach the Bible. Why don't you come to our class? I said, fine. I'm quite happy to listen to anyone. So I went. And that man, you know, it's nice to see this minister's wearing nice suits, ties, you know, and not dressed like tramps, you know, like our thing I have, you know, and my wife always put them on the bed. Sure that I put them before I come, you know. But, you know, out of obedience, you know, it's good, at least. At least for 1 hour a week, you know, it's not bad. Do that. 1 hour a week obedience is quite a good medicine. You know. And this man sat with my brother to tell him in my presence that the Sabbath has been preserved intact since God created the world. Because God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. And it never been broken. Never, ever. So I smiled. And he said, and what do you think? I said to him, well, you know, literal understanding of the Bible is very dangerous. Remember when Joshua made the sun and the moon stand for 24 hours? Of Gibeon, as we say it in Hebrew. So I said to him, if that is literal, then this became Sunday, and Sunday became Monday, and it was God who broke the Sabbath. He panicked. And he said to me, you know that? I said, me? My name is Chaim. Father calls me George just for convenience. You know, we are the slaves of the law. Have you read Colossians chapter 2? Who speaks of the Sabbath? Have you heard about Jesus going to the cornfield and allowing the apostles to eat? And have you heard about the healing miracles on the Sabbath? All this is done to tell us that the Sabbath has gone. Because the true rest is in the heart. Packed his notes and left. He never came back to our house. Great sorrow, actually. So, to hear the opposite view, as you know, legalism and literalism, it's enemy of God and humanity. Old friend Philemon used to say to me, God can deal with the devil without any difficulty. When it comes to legalism, he has many difficulties. Among them is these people who are slaves to the law, George. God has a horrible time trying to put some sense in their head. And you know, my dear friends, it took me years, believe me, acquire the courage to say that here in USA, or even before that in Britain, and to see it in my own heart, that what holds me back from the love of God is my own understanding of the Word of God, and my own preconceived ideas. So please read the seven rules. They are fantastic. Our great Augustine, you know, used them in his homilies, in his interpretation of the scriptures, and you know, my goodness, if you read Augustine, you are acquiring jars of pure honey, real honey. Now let's go to the psalm, and because my main point tonight is God forsaken our Lord Jesus Christ. Don't read the psalm. First verse is quite common. It is the cry of our Lord on the cross. And you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? Dismissing my plea, the words of my crying. That is very, very hard, you know. To come out of the lips of a pious Jew does not cause a problem to us. Come out of the lips of the Holy Son of God causes major problems. And you know, all of us must have uttered this cry in certain circumstances. Hear it on the lips of dying people. People who despaired. People who are besieged by so many problems that sometimes it is impossible even for their friends to tell them that God has a hand in it. That's why, you know, after I did the psalm, I wrote my own reflection, so you can read it later on. But on page 3, on page 5 also, I was talking to my old friend Philemon. And you know, I like that. He said this to give us the right to ask the same question. But the next 3 words are very difficult. And to wait for an answer.
Right.
5 here. Wait for an answer. You know, this is Philemon's insight. It's true. The answer comes at the end of Psalm 22 and will come at the time of your death or even or when we see the glory of the next life. You will then know the answer of this question, why have you forsaken me? How terrible. So one cannot hide the truth. Many things happen to us. We don't know. We don't know. I try to squeeze my grandmother, you know, the woman that I owe her everything good in my life. Or a little bit of education or any kindness goes back to that great lady. Walked on her feet from Hungary to Egypt. 28 people in the journey.
Well.
Back in 18 something, you know. 1800, yes. 1820.
19.
No, 18. No, not 19, 18. 1880 possibly. You know, in her old age, after things settled down, she had children, and started to rebuild their life. One evening I said to her, you know, because she was a great lover of the Psalms, and she taught me how to memorize the Psalms, you know, to use them. And then she doesn't believe in God, still says the Psalms. I said to her, you're being funny. If I don't believe in God, why should I talk to him? Talk to him if you don't believe in him. One day he may talk to you. And if he talks to you, you may believe in him. But you know, don't lose faith in God because God will never lose faith in you. You know, these lovely words kept me going through all the things I have done in my young age. And one day I said to her, you know, Sarah, tell me the truth. You ever feel that you have been forsaken times? I must have been about 18, hooked on my feet. At that time, it was no more than $5 in her purse. All the time, we depended on our knowledge. Where will be the next Jewish community? Go and knock on the door, ask for shelter, for food, and for water, and for necessities. I think, you know, in Judaism, this is a religion. No one can abdicate. But he did receive help. He said to me, but you know, sitting in a foreign house, though they are Jews, and we can say the evening prayers together, nevertheless, how often I felt that God has abandoned us. It's not my house, it's not my people, and I'm really grateful for the help I receive. But nevertheless, it is entirely a foreign environment. Psalm 27, how can we sing the songs of Yahweh in a foreign environment? One day while she was sitting, eating, and the cheese that was offered to her, she remembered and she started to weep. We have the hospitality. Other people sitting around said to her, young woman, what are you weeping for? She said, my home. But, you know, my home, the rest of the family, you know, we lost everything. And then one of the ladies said to her, and is that new? It's new for me. New in the Bible. God has a plan to abandon us. Leave us. At the mercy of the nations. You know, the non-Jews. At the mercy of our enemies. At the mercy of our friends. In order to mature, to grow up. So eat your food and stop crying. You know? I heard that story when I was living in freedom and prosperity. When I was locked into prison for political reasons, I never committed a crime. I tell you, I did all my crimes when I was a young boy. But when I reached the age of wisdom, I did not violate the law even once. This recording may go back to certain people in Egypt, you know. So, in my distress, I remembered Sarah. I remember Psalm 22. I know I am innocent. I was locked behind bars as the enemy of the state, the little me. Enemy of the state, imagine, you know, I can turn over or overrun the regime of Egypt. By what means? The only thing I had at the time was a bicycle. No more, you know. And I joked to the man who interrogated me and said to me, you know, I want to change the government of Egypt by what? By money? I haven't got any. By army? I haven't got any. No, you belong to a group of dissidents and you are a very dangerous man. You are the enemy of the state. And I said, but the state is an enemy of me too. So how can we solve this enmity? And he said, behind bars you would learn your lesson. Behind bars. But you know, reciting the psalm, I kept saying, Lord, I don't believe you have any business in what happened to me. But you have business to teach me how to make the best of it. Now, I won't leave that with you tonight, you know. Sometimes things happen to us not because God has desired these things to happen to us. But God has a desire to let us grow up and learn from our predicament and our conflicts what will be the outcome of that. In fact, God's answer doesn't come in a day or two or three. This is a problem. Maybe it takes a year. I spent 9 months in that prison. I was released. So when we were released, I was released with a Muslim friend. I could not go back to my parents' house. They didn't want me. I'm always the one who's not wanted, you know. So when I meet your love here tonight, I say, my goodness, God has changed his mind about me. Yeah. So the woman came to take her son and said to me, where are you going? Out of the prison, you know, where I'm going? I said, nowhere. You come with us. To Alexandria, took us to a hotel. You know, she bought underwear, new clothes, and took us to Alexandria, where she had a nice cottage on the Mediterranean. And, you know, a great woman. You know, you walk into her villa, there is books and television and radio, and things are fantastic. And next morning, some breakfast. And I sat to eat, and suddenly all the horrible things of the prison hit me and I started to cry. She came, she was wearing a dress, I still remember it very well, we became very good friends. Wearing a dress that has buttons all the way down. She came and said to me, what are you crying for? Just remind me with the story of my grandmother. What are you crying for? I said this and that to me and she said to me, you are a hero. Don't you see? You are the enemy of the state. You must be a very special. And then in a moment that shook my being, said, look at me, and took off her dress, stood naked. Look at me. And I looked. There were cuts and bruises on her chest. Do you know what was my job? I was an upper class prostitute. This is a pin knife. Someone tried to cut off my breast. This is that. And I have a son, and I raised him, and I'm going to eat my breakfast, and you are going to eat your breakfast, and stop crying and be a man. And I never forgot that woman. We corresponded even when I went back to study theology in England, and we were good friends. You know, dear friends, isn't that the same story of those who are in turmoil? Is that the same story in the Bible itself? You have the righteous person, and he or she meets the darkness of the human soul in other people. And they decide to take the challenge and to get through the dark tunnel. And that is the message of the psalm. That is the message of Jesus. Don't tell God, why me? Because one of the rabbis said, Why not you? Why not you? I am this, I am that. Yes. But you need to be pushed hard enough to learn some hard things. I have met in your past life, or if you meet in your next life, some hard time with health, money, government or the police or whoever, or with your Christian community, don't say why and stop. Why you put me in that situation and now I'm ready to learn, what do you want me to learn? Because this is a way out of the pit. We go down to the pit, we stay in the pit if we conditioning. And that's why the greatness of Psalm 22, it doesn't stop at the sad period. My goodness, the psalmist in verse 9 says, but you brought me forth from the womb. On you I was cast at birth. And he goes on. Verse 15, my strength is dried up. And you know, he goes on. But at the end of the psalm, there is a complete different melody. The victory of God starts to break through. Our problem is that when we read this psalm, it will take us, what, quarter of an hour? But this could not have been a quarter of an hour experience. This could have been a journey of David himself. It would be years before he matured enough to write these words. Oh, my dear friends, maturity is God's purpose in our creation. Maturity is so important for God and so important for you. And our leader, letter to the Hebrews, matured, English translation says he became perfect through suffering. Yes, but he also matured in his suffering. That we ourselves may become also in him matured also. It's something I love to eat, but I can't eat because of allergy. Back in England, and I heard you have it in America, but I can see it, and I would love to have a taste. Oh, but it triggers all sorts of things. It triggers asthma, and called matured cheddar cheese. Love matured cheddar cheese? I love it. The smell, you know? When I see it, you know, and you know, this is the best time my wife can tease me. She will buy it, leave it in the fridge. And you know, I open the fridge and I look at it and said, oh, my great desire, I love you so much, but I'm going to keep you alive. I'm not going to touch you. And you know, this is, you know, one of our Yiddish things, you know, where we say, you know, oh, I love you so much, but I let you, I spare your death, you know. Means I'm not going to eat you. So, you know, but that matured cheddar, ask anyone who is in that business, not done and sold immediately. It stays in a black, dark dungeon. There it will mature. When you make yogurt, you know, you make yogurt at home? You don't? That's terrible. Right? You trust Meyer and Kruger, these people? Don't tell them anything about me. You know, you have to keep it. Do you make wine? You're terrible. Are you Mormons? You know, we used to make wine, you know. Wine matures. Wine matures. You know, wine is great, you know. It's great stuff. You know, if you drink one bottle on your own, you'll see how God created the world in 6 days. And if you drink the second bottle on your own, you will see Adam and Eve eating from the tree. If you drink the third one on your own, you'll find yourself naked outside paradise. Oh. Well, whatever, Bob, this is, you know, I sat with a man who has been born in the concentration camp in Dachau in Poland. He now lives in Israel. Great man. And he has seen the horror of the of the Second World War. He walked through Eastern Europe, Western Europe. And I said to him, you know, I want you to tell me something that bothers me. Why the Jews have that great virtue of laughing at themselves more than the other people. He said to me, why do you want to do that? Why don't you learn about that? I said, because I don't have it. That's one thing. I have a little bit of it, but not in the same strength as I saw it in my relatives. My gene-file genetics, you know. Why, what is the cause of that? You are able to laugh at your catastrophes. I'll tell you, but you will not believe me. He said, no, come on, try. And he said, the first thing is the Book of Psalms. The Book of Psalms has penetrated our own being. And I said, what is humor or laughing itself from the Book of Psalms? And he said, because in the Book of Psalms, there is always an argument with God. Why does this bring humor? And he said, because, come on, you know, have a little bit of sense in your head. You stand facing your own creator. And why? And very often, he doesn't answer you. Very often, the best thing is you look and say, well, I think my problems are not as great as I think. He always, many instances, remind me of the story of the man whom I regard as my great hero. That's Lord Nelson. You know Lord Nelson? You know, the man who led the British Navy, destroyed the French Navy outside Alexandria? He had one eye. Just one eye. And the sailors came and said to him, no, the enemies! Put the telescope on his blind eye and said, I see no enemies. And, you know, he is my hero. Because, you know, problems. And I had that operation on one eye. I said, good. I can say, I can see. You know, but you know, when we magnify our problems, you know what will happen to us? We can see the way, the escape way. There's nothing more childish than a siege mentality, that we all have a little bit of it. Siege mentality, where we are living under siege, you know? And you know, one day, when it gets warm a little bit, need a little bit of warm weather, we'll do at least 3 chapters of the book of Job. Job. Eob. Oh, what do you call him in English?
Job.
What is that? I never heard of him. You know, what I love about him, you know, is one catastrophe after the other. Not only that, but his wife come and said to him, you know, bless the Lord and die. Well, curse or bless, you know, is, you know, bless is a trick word in Hebrew. It could, you know, curse also is a form of blessing. But we'll deal with that at a certain time, not now. You know, and he says, oh no, oh. And you know, his friends come and have a horrible time. Give him the worst discussion ever. You know, and who are you, and you know, all this because you are not walking righteous, you know, and this and that. And he goes on self-defense. Do you know, after that long dialogue comes the vision of God. This must have taken years, I'm telling you. Do you know, it is this maturity of a man that learned that life is not only about joy, lust, and possession, but life is also about learning how to deal with suffering and problems, how to cope. I did not believe what I saw on the telly and insisted to see that person with my own eyes. An Irish man who had no arms at all and can paint using his toes. I said, rubbish. This is a Hollywood stuff. I saw the man with my own eyes. I kept saying, either lock yourself in your prison or get out and do something creative. And God wants us to get out of that prison. And that's the whole meaning of the cross. That's why, my dear friends, that sounds a little bit strong for you. I don't know. Forget about when you eat that cake, you know. But if you look at the page 4, at the end, you know, of Sophronius, one of the great heroes that I love also. about Jesus. He was forsaken but not abandoned. He was forsaken but not hated, because God is love. He was forsaken not as a disobedient slave, but as a beloved son. I, that hurts. A disobedient person, if he's forsaken, he will look at the master and say, well, I never loved you. But you know, a beloved son to be forsaken is at the very root of the pain and the suffering. Isn't it? If a foreign person insults you, someone you don't know, and insults you or do something damage, it hurts. But it hurts more if it is someone that you love. I've been through the divorce like me, then you know what I'm talking about. Suddenly things started to fall down and become fragmented. Then you know, my goodness, I have taken so much, but why can't I cope with this? For a very simple reason. I'm dealing with someone who is close to me, near to my life. And you know, he was forsaken as heir, but not as disowned. You do that in training your kids in America. You know, in Judaism, when you become a bar mitzvah, you know what I mean by a bar mitzvah? You may have attended that. One thing you don't know, because it doesn't come in the service, they give that little boy, you know, a little bit of money to him, you know, and enjoy yourself. Now you are a man. Show us your wisdom. And sometimes it's a very good sum of money given by all the people from the family who came to attend the service. And here is a very good joke for you. Anti-Catholic joke. If you are Catholic, forgive me. It's a Jewish family that had a bar mitzvah. And they brought the rabbi and said, Rabbi, can you prophesy what our boy will be? I said, well, let us put him to the test after the service. Get him into a room, leave a bottle of whiskey, $100 bill, and the Torah. Let's see what he will do. And then they said, why do you do that? I said, well, if he goes and drinks the whiskey, he will be alcoholic. Takes the money, put in his pocket, he will be a businessman. If he read the Torah, he will become a miserable rabbi like me. After the service, they led the boy into the room, and they were watching, and the boy goes in, takes the money, put in his pocket, starts to drink the whiskey and read Torah. He did it in one go. And the rabbi took off his hat and said, my goodness, your son's going to be a Roman Catholic priest. Sorry about that, you know. It is, you know, it is that minute of the heir, you know. What are you going to do with your own inheritance? And then, you know, he was forsaken, but not disowned. He was forsaken as a sacrifice for sin. But he carried his own sacrifice to Holy of Holies to present it to God. Taken in order to go to hell to spoil its power. This is maturity again. I know that Christ ascending to hell is not a common theme in Western Christianity today. But I am sorry. For me, Easter in our Eastern Christian tradition is the destruction of hell. At least for the believers. Don't squeeze me about universalism and all that. I'll not give a straightforward answer. For a very simple reason, I don't have an answer. You know, it is a victory over hell. You know? He was forsaken to go to the outer darkness to shine on those who are sitting in the valley of death. He was forsaken that we may no longer be forsaken, especially at the hour of death. My goodness, my dear friends, if you have been forsaken all your life and you have a little bit of time to pray before you give up your spirit, in Christian tradition, we know that Christ will come and take your soul to the resting place, a believer. Not the angel will come and take your soul. Go somewhere else. I don't know where. I'll not even try it myself. You know, it is this moment where the fullness of Christ will shine. I sat next to dying people when I was a chaplain in Nottingham. I have seen that with my own eyes. People are really looking for the time to be released from their suffering. They are looking for that minute where they are out into the full light. Put to death, which he conquered in others, like Lazarus. But he had to taste what he himself has defeated. The maturity of Jesus. He's the light of the world, but he had to go to the darkness of death. He's the one who sustains the whole creation, but was hanged on a cross to die. He cried on our behalf, so that we may not cry any more in despair. You know, the cross did not end at, my God, why have you forsaken me? It ended with, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. God from Psalm 119, by the way. You know, between the time of hanging till the time he gave up his spirit, he must have went up and down between hell and earth and heaven several times, and he saw the darkness of evil, the darkness of death, the power of the devil, and so forth. He died on our behalf. He died that we may no longer die as sinners. And you know, my dear friends, what is the most painful element in our sense of being forsaken? That when we feel that we are rejected. Rejection by friends, by children, by husbands, by people from your own community, by your neighbor. Hurts badly, isn't it? Why? There is a good Jewish holy answer. Humanity is created as one lump. You know what I mean by one lump? One piece. I think I can, if you allow, I know who dropped it that one. We wrote that lesson when we were 12 years old. This is the total sum of humanity. But evil enters into that lump and starts to do this. Not to tear us apart. And you know, my dear friends, that tearing takes a generation or two, or even more. Maybe hundreds of years. My wife said 1,000, but I'll not go for 1,000 because I'll be dead. 100 would be just enough for me. Do you mind? Thank you. He's obedient now. You know, very often, certain circumstances, though the tearing is happened to all of us, my dear friends, if you listen to politics like me, follow the debate in one of the places which thought our problems, called the UN. Here, people representing big powers, you know, what do they say? And here the little ones crying, and here the tyrants and the liars being presented by their own representatives. I mean, what is that? So, what are we talking about? Is this tearing? But you know, sometimes in Indianapolis, you will be, you know, by rejection, cut off, standing on your own like that. That seems absolutely difficult, isn't it? At least here, in spite of the tears, there is a little bit of relationship. Correct? But here, and the gulf is so huge. But you know, the secret is this. This tearing here is already here in the individual. You think you are rejected, left over, because you are not loved. I always have to come back and remind you. Please, my dear brothers and sisters, please. Life, human life is made of a triad. Love, loved, rejected. At least of a dyad of two. Love and to be loved. When there is no love around us, we feel that we are rejected. What's the name of that man you told me he was an alcoholic and one of your friends found him in the street and he became a director? You have told me a story of a man who, what was his background? That sense, you know, a courageous man. The story of George Miller? Muller, depends where you are, in Britain or in Germany. I'm British, you know. You know, the... have you ever heard the first American missionary to Japan, Kitagawa? He had the hardest time ever. He was a Presbyterian to preach. He struggled with the Japanese, you know. All you know, this chauvinism and the way he was able to reflect the life of Christ to people who are Christian. Going back to this. All right. If I cannot come back to this, what I'm supposed to do is this. This is me. This is you. We all carry all the scars in that big lump in us. Somehow. Not necessarily all of them, some of them, a shade of them. So what I'm supposed to do if I'm that little one? I'll tell you, it's very simple, but it is very hard. Why it's very simple? Because the first thing is we must not look for love to be loved by other people. We must start by loving other people. That's hard. This is terrible. You know, you must not look to be loved. They don't welcome me. Welcome them. They don't like me. Like them. You know, it is this sense of maturity. Don't wait for the people to open their arms for you. No, you open your arms for them. And that is why Psalm 22 ends with that magnificent jubilee. I will tell your name to next generations. Many people will come and praise you. I will do this because this cannot be reconciled with the very beginning. Why have you forsaken me? You know, verse 29, all the living shall eat together and worship, and those who sleep in the nether land shall bow before him. You know, let all the ends of the earth remember and return to Yahweh, and all the clans of the nations worship before him. I mean, this is not the cry of someone who has lost hope. And if I am that one that has to love before to be loved, next step is very simple, but very hard. You know, everything is hard because it goes back to me and to you. That is the hard part of it. If I am that person and I have to look to love people and not to be loved, what's the next step? Is not to wait for a good outcome of those whom you love. Comes goods, as we say in English, it's a bonus. Is that good for American English? No. If it doesn't come, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. When I was debating the matter with Philemon, this man is my hero, is the greatest man I ever met. You know, he's the greatest man after George Bibel, absolutely. You know, this man is the greatest man because he said to me, you know, George, they don't like me here in the monastery. And I said to him, are you expecting to be treated differently? And he said, no. Why is that, Philemon? He said, I wait for them to change. I will divide myself. Split myself in the middle. Between the hope of them changing and my own effort to love them. I better stay one hole and not look for anything. If it comes, thanks be to God. If it doesn't come, I still Philemon as I was before. You know, we are divided by our own expectation. Absolutely. Don't put the whole of your being on go. I know betting is not good for the Methodists, but I assume other Christians can bet. Bet on horses? No. Well, I don't have money, but you know, so I don't do it. And but anyway, here's a joke for you to wake up. Baptist, you know, Baptists don't bet at all. Passing by the horse racing ring, and saw a Catholic priest putting his hand on a horse. The horse will go and win the race. And the priest blessed the second one, and he did the same thing, and he said, well, this is no longer betting, since I know the result beforehand. The result beforehand is there's no longer betting. So he puts his, waited the priest, put his hand on the horse, picked the number, and put all his money in the, bought a ticket, and for his great horror, the horse walked 3 meters and fell down dead. Akin said, Father, what have you been doing? That's the first one. Second. And he said, what shall I do with you, Baptist? What's the difference between sing and the last rites? The last rites in the Catholic Church is something the priest will do before you die. So, you know, my dear friends, don't wait to win. Because winning comes or goes, it doesn't matter. But you know, our Lord told us something. I tell you, it entered into all the military books, but in different names. You will be surprised. The greatest strategist that I know is Jesus Christ, and I love him because of that. What would a man profit if he, gain and lose his life or his soul? And you know, in the military books, now this being, you know, it says to the people who are in leadership, you know, generals and below to a major general, you know, and even to a major. Don't look to win the battle, but win the favor and the solidarity of your company. Because without them, you cannot fight, you cannot win. If you lose the battle, stay winning your own company. And you know, if we look for the gain, we divide ourselves. If we look for things that get better in our churches, in our communities, in our work, we are wasting our time and our effort. Do whatever you think to be good. And one day the sun will rise. While it is pitch dark, while you are forsaken, rejected, abandoned, whatever, wait for the dawn. And that is not a very good thing to do, because we human beings are always itching for an achievement. But waiting is good. Because while you are waiting, you have gained your own peace. If there's no peace here in my heart, there's no peace out there. If there's no God in my heart, there's no God anywhere. My old friend Philemon, who never went to church on a Sunday. Can you imagine a monk? Doesn't go to church to attend the service on a Sunday. And when he was born, after a while, the community gave up on him. He's a fool, you know, forget about him. One day, he came to church. And the abbot was talking to the community and said, "Hey, brothers, we had a miracle today. Philemon came to church," you know, in a sarcasm. You know, when he puts his head down, that's Philemon, then you know, a bomb is going to explode. Put his head down and he said, "Father Abbot, I did not come to church. The church came to me." And then the abbot said to him, "And what is that foolish statement, Philemon?" And he said, "Father Abbot, the church is in my heart all the time. I just came here to be sure that what I have in my heart is exactly what you are doing." I wrote that in my diary so quickly, you know, because I kept saying, I'm going to forget that. And very important good news. We start the Gospel of John in January, and everything on the handout is out of my dialogue with Philemon. I printed one page, gave it to me. Well, if my wife, it must be good. The entire insight, I'll print one page, bring it for the handouts next Wednesday to excite you, to encourage you to come. You know, I sat down and he knows the Gospel of John by heart, and he started to read a verse, stop at a word, comment on it, and whenever I said to him, "I won't write these things," and he said, "No. If the truth is in your own heart, you will never lack words. But if words are in your heart and there's no truth, you always lack words." But you know, the truth is, I used to run like a deer to my room to write down very quickly. And I wrote 6 notebooks with all my notes. But you know, I was telling May when I started translating and typing this morning, I kept saying, "My goodness, I still remember it as if I heard it yesterday." For a very simple reason. The man has been so close to my heart, and he was so much unusual. That will be our next journey by God's grace for next. Are you sure you want to eat that cake? Who's in charge of that?
Birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy
I'm telling you, if I see these statues and things and this, what you call them, Santa Claus, I can manufacture dynamite in my house.
He's in the devil's youth.
See the address, guys.
Okay. Let's go and eat. Thank you very much.
George, there's a custom, and it involves a window. And as an American custom, if you don't know, implies a life, a wonderful life so far.
First century.
It's the same.
But you make a wish, you don't tell anybody what the wish is. You bless you. Speech is over.
So, you are God's gift. And that's another one. See you in heaven. I'm going to eat the cake now.
Whatever, he did.